Section 2. Post-war prosperity spreads across the state. As you read, look for the strength of the state's economy after the war, the early airline industry, how the Cold War affected the state's economy, and the following terms: service industry, shopping center, and Cold War. In 1949, William J. Pace, an Alamance County farmer, enjoyed a moment of fame. His family became the 1 millionth in rural America to have a telephone installed since the end of World War II. Like the Model T before it, the telephone could be any color as long as it was black. It had a rotary dial, and the Paces were on a party line, which meant they shared the phone line with several neighbors. Still, it was state-of-the-art technology for the time. Rural North Carolinians appreciated the other changes going on around them. Carr Scott convinced the state to pave almost half of its rural roads. Duke Power Company added 144,000 rural customers for its electricity in 5 years. The post-war economy. In the years after World War II, North Carolinians took pride in their high rankings for things they made for other Americans. For example, they made more wooden and upholstered furniture for dining rooms and bedrooms than any other state. They continued to produce over half the cigarettes rolled in the nation. Some years after the war, they raised more sweet potatoes and peanuts than anyone else. The Big Three. A larger number of North Carolina families worked in factories than any other state in the post-war years. Most had jobs in the Big Three: tobacco, textiles, and furniture. Most of these factories were in the same places they had been since the 1910s, and most of the owners were the same families who had founded the businesses. The biggest moneymaker in the state remained the manufacturing end of Tobacco Road. After the war, R.J. Reynolds in Winston-Salem outsold American Tobacco in Durham to become the nation's largest tobacco company. After the war, R.J. Reynolds, Jr. continued to run his father's company until he died of lung cancer. About the time the federal government began to warn Americans about the health risks of smoking, RJR introduced two new filter-tipped cigarettes designed to cut down the toxins a smoker inhaled. The Winston and Salem brands became leading sellers in the nation by the 1960s. Burlington Mills, with 26,000 employees, and Cannon Mills, with 15,000, remained the largest textile operations. Each operated mills across the western end of the state. Burlington continued to lead the nation with the making of synthetic, not natural, fabrics. Cannon introduced fitted pre-shrunk sheets in 1949, which made it easier for Americans to make their beds. The Hanes Company in Winston-Salem continued to be the largest maker of hosiery and underwear. Over half the western counties had at least one furniture factory after the war. In High Point, the Exposition Building was open all year for furniture store owners to browse and buy North Carolina products. Twice a year, thousands of buyers from stores all over the nation came to the furniture show. Attracting new industry. The state's population increased in the post-war period, and more jobs were needed. State leaders in the 1950s worked to recruit northern manufacturing companies to the state. Local communities provided cheap land and low taxes. Wages for employees were lower than in the north. Dozens of companies took up the state's offer. Western Electric took over an old blanket factory in Winston-Salem. The Proctor Silex Company was soon making half the nation's toasters in Mount Airy. Kewanee Technical Furniture, which moved to Statesville, made the laboratory tables used in high school science classes. DuPont opened several facilities on the coastal plain. This migration of northern companies particularly benefited the East by diversifying its tobacco-dominated economy. Lance in Charlotte and Krispy Kreme in Winston-Salem became famous for making something North Carolinians ate on work breaks: crackers and donuts. Lance put food dispensing machines in every factory it could, and Krispy Kreme opened its own shops in Piedmont cities. Trucking companies, like Carolina based in Cherryville and McLean based in Winston-Salem, made it easier for goods to be shipped in and out of the state. North Carolina also moved forward in what came to be called the service industry. The service industry includes those companies where giving someone help is as important as the making of a product. Innovations. The biggest innovation after the war pointed North Carolinians skyward. Before the war, state citizens who flew did so in their own planes or on airlines from other places. In 1948, Thomas H. Davis turned the Camel City Flying Service into Piedmont Airlines. Piedmont started out with propeller-driven planes that crisscrossed the state. The planes landed in the major cities like Charlotte, Greensboro, and Wilmington. Piedmont then connected passengers to the Midwest. Piedmont grew slowly in the 1950s. As flying grew more convenient for state residents in the 1960s, Piedmont gained connections to Atlanta and New York, which encouraged more people to fly to their destinations. Piedmont put up a sign in New York that said, "Piedmont puts New York on the map." Profits soared. The most significant innovation was the development of Research Triangle Park. Located in some old pine woods between Raleigh and Durham, RTP, as it was always called, took advantage of the facilities and faculties at UNC, State, and Duke. The idea was to have laboratories and libraries of the three universities available for research and development companies. It worked. By the 1960s, large companies like IBM had moved into the park. Labor union failures. Despite the great growth of industry and industrial training schools, North Carolinians continued to have some of the lowest wages in the nation. In addition, most workers continued to be suspicious of labor unions because there had been so many failures in the past. Unions from the North did make great efforts to enlist workers. African Americans, who had some of the lowest paying jobs at the R.J. Reynolds factories, tried to grow a union in the 1940s. Its links to communism again made most people suspicious. Another textile union made a new effort to organize cotton mill workers in 1948 with Operation Dixie. Rising wages, however, kept most workers from joining. One union organizer in Kannapolis wrote back that not only did these people not want a union, most had no idea what a labor union was. North Carolina matched its low wage rank with an equally low unionization rank. This came at a time when almost half of the workers in northern states were in a union. Commerce and trade. Just about every downtown in every North Carolina town was at its peak after the war. So many people came to shop that most cities had problems with parking. The Belk Stores of Charlotte expanded its chain of department stores across the state, opening one a month in some years. In addition, some merchants tried to move to the edge of the downtowns, where they could pave parking lots. These supermarkets, as they were called, focused on groceries, with shoppers told to service themselves in the provided carts. By the 1950s, developers hit upon the idea of shopping centers, where a group of stores lined up next to a parking lot. The first ones in the state were Cameron Village in Raleigh and the Friendly Shopping Center in Greensboro. In 1961, the Charlottetown Mall became the first enclosed shopping center, one with a roof over the entire complex. Because North Carolina had always allowed its banks to operate anywhere within the state, the leading ones were spread across their regions. BB&T, headquartered in Wilson, had offices in 15 coastal plain towns. First Citizens operated 25 offices south of Raleigh. Wachovia, the largest bank at the time, had offices in the larger cities, Winston-Salem, Asheville, Charlotte, and Raleigh. The Cold War and the state's economy. During the time North Carolina became more prosperous, the United States was the richest nation on earth. The United States, however, had an enemy. The Soviet Union continued to oppose the influence of America. To counter the Soviets, the United States kept its military as strong as possible after World War II. To do so, Army bases like Fort Bragg, Air Force bases like Seymour Johnson, and Marine bases like Camp Lejeune were essential. North Carolina became one of the most important training grounds for the Cold War. Cold War refers to the hostilities between the United States and the Soviet Union after World War II. It was cold because it was fought mainly with words and diplomacy. Occasionally, the Cold War turned hot. Thousands of young people at North Carolina bases prepared for the Korean War, which was fought in the early 1950s. When American involvement in Vietnam escalated in 1965, Fort Bragg became one of the basic training sites for soldiers from across the country. The growth of military bases continued to create jobs for North Carolinians in the 1960s. Civilians were needed for a variety of jobs on every base. Businesses in nearby towns like Jacksonville and Fayetteville grew when military families shopped there. Fayetteville, for example, came to have more used car lots per resident than any other town in the state. Farming after World War II. Almost half the state still farmed in some way. In fact, North Carolina had more of its citizens connected to agriculture than any other state except Texas. Farms were smaller than ever before because tractors and other machines made it possible to grow more on less land. Farm incomes were 8 times higher after the war than they had been during the Great Depression. The tobacco allotment program became part of daily life on the coastal plain. In Nash and Pitt counties, new tobacco farms were opened. As cigarette consumption continued to grow across the nation, more and more mountains farmers grew burley tobacco, which was added to give cigarettes more flavor. Cotton production, concentrated along the South Carolina line, slowly declined year by year as larger farms were being opened in Texas and Mississippi that produced more for the market more cheaply. In western counties like Iredell and Rowan, more farmers switched to dairying, growing hay in their fields and milking their cows with new mechanical suction devices. Biltmore Dairy, an outgrowth of the Biltmore Estate, became the state's leading marketer of milk. Special feature, Carolina Places, Fort Bragg. One of the most important military bases in the United States has been in North Carolina since the early 1900s. Hundreds of thousands of American service personnel have trained here. Thousands of North Carolinians have worked here at what is the largest single community in terms of acres in the whole state. As hard as it is to believe today, Fort Bragg is a century old. Near the end of World War I, the United States Army bought up thousands of acres of Sandhills Woods. The idea was to use the soft ground for long-range artillery practice. So few people lived in the area west of Fayetteville that it was pretty easy to set up Camp Bragg. Although the war ended before the base was fully used, the Army decided to keep it open. Keeping Fort Bragg turned out to be very important when the next big war came along. After the attack at Pearl Harbor in December 1941, the United States had to mobilize as quickly as possible. Almost overnight, Fort Bragg went from the size of a small town to that of a huge city. More than 100,000 troops were brought through Fort Bragg in the first year of the war. More than 31,000 men from the Sandhills were hired to construct barracks and other facilities. The 9th Infantry Division alone needed more than 600 buildings. North Carolinians were soon putting up a new building every 32 hours. Fort Bragg remained an important base during the decades of the Cold War. It became the training ground for the Special Forces, soldiers trained to fight in unconventional ways in small actions around the world. This type of training was begun here at the end of the Korean War and stepped up in size and intensity as the United States became involved in the Vietnam War. By the late 1960s, the Green Berets, as the Special Forces were more commonly known, had become internationally respected. John Wayne made a film to honor them, and a number one song about them played over and over on radio stations. After Vietnam, the 82nd Airborne continued to be based at Fort Bragg. It had major roles in small military operations in the Caribbean during the 1980s. In each case, an American president called upon those from Fort Bragg to help lead military police actions in Grenada, Haiti, and Panama. The various units at Fort Bragg have been central to the complex military operations that were used to fight the Gulf War in 1991 and the Iraq War in 2003. Fort Bragg is the home to the JSOC, or Joint Special Operations Command. This is one of the many important military units known by its acronym. JSOC is in charge of many of the special operations within the U.S. military, including the Navy SEALs. Ever since World War II, Fort Bragg has been a community as well as a base. It has apartments and subdivisions for the families of soldiers, several public schools, and its own shopping facilities. There are museums to visit, including one that interprets the distinguished record of the 82nd Airborne. On an average day, about 40,000 Americans are on base to work, live, and do their duty for their country.